Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. First, we explore all angles of the Trae Young trade, what it means for the Wizards, what it means for Trae Young moving forward, what it means for small guards. And we talk about the Hawks. How good are they? Are there any other moves that need to be made? We then talk about Anthony Edwards. He became the third youngest player to reach 10,000 career points. We talk about the awesome season that he's having and the ways that he has grown. Loudly and quietly. We then tap in with the second return of all-star votings. We got some new names on the list. Hello, Scotty Barnes. We got some interesting races happening right now. And then we close it out with unrivaled thoughts. I am on the scene in Miami still. Full day of practice on Thursday. Want to get into some insights that I was able to glean from players and coaches, as well as preview some of the matchups heading into the weekend. We hope you enjoy. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Friday. How are you?
Feeling swell. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. And ready to talk some basketball. So thank you, Dunkers, for embracing your bounce.
There we go. We are indeed going to talk some hoops. We got some news, Steve. Kind of alluded to it earlier in the week. It felt like the Trae Young era was on the cusp of ending in Atlanta with trade talks starting to swirl around him. We now have a deal that is expected to be officially finalized, the trade call and all that stuff happening later today. The Atlanta Hawks have traded Trae Young to the Washington Wizards. In return, they are receiving CJ McCollum and Corey Kispert. At least as of now, no picks going either way. It's a straight player swap between the two teams. And Steve, going to say something that is very rarely said on this podcast. We're going to start with the Washington Wizards. We're going to start with the Trae Young angle because naturally, anytime a multi-time all-star is moved in season, that is a story in and of itself. The way that this story has presented itself, going back to the offseason, Trae's extension eligible, do we want to commit long-term to Trae Young? In light of what we saw from Jalen Johnson before he was ultimately injured, in light of the offseason moves that the Atlanta Hawks made, that answer appeared to be no, or at the very least, it was wait and see. And now we are here.
Yeah, we're gonna take the long road home a couple days a week. Get a new wardrobe. Start working out a little bit.
I see where this is going. I'm gonna leave that where it's at. But Trae Young, now a member of the Washington Wizards, and I am intrigued by this move from Washington's standpoint. I think a lot of people have done it, so I'm not going to be the first to do it. But if you are circling all the way back from the Bradley Beal trade and what they got for him, what those assets were moved for, and now it is CJ McCollum turning into Trae Young, like, it's hard not to tip the cap to Washington management to make this kind of swing. You are adding at the high end a star caliber guard without giving up anyone in your immediate core. And it's also a bit of a short-term commitment. You have the Trae Young contract this year. You have the player option that I would assume he either accepts, or if they're able to work out some sort of multi-year deal in the summer, then you have that it. And you can do so while still having massive cap space heading into the offseason. So I think this is a good bit of asset management for the Washington Wizards on a broad view. But for Trae himself,
I was going to say, before we get to Trae, I was going to say, I don't mind the trade for the Washington Wizards, because why not? Why not? I don't think it's we're trying to accelerate our rebuild type move, but we have an opportunity to add a talent, a player of that type of caliber. Where else and how else are we going to be able to get that? We have a lot of young talent, but as far as this slot goes, we've been kind of kicking this can down the road to a degree when you talk about the assets, and we're about to run out of cans. So, yeah, let's turn CJ McCollum and Corey Kispert into Trae Young and not have to give up any picks and keep our young core. We kind of saw something similar, a little different in San Antonio, but hey, we can get De'Aaron Fox and not give up a bunch for it. This is fantastic. So I think it's an opportunity for Trae Young to impact Washington. It's interesting how it all came about, because I was very encouraged by the start in Atlanta, but I'm sure we'll touch on that when we get to the Hawks. But I mean, it's interesting.
It is interesting. I think there are some real, like, existential questions to ask about not just Trae Young, but, like, the small guard itself. I want to get to that a little bit later, since there's naturally been a lot of conversation around that since Trae has been moved and other smaller guards have been moved over the past 2 or 3 years. But to the Trae addition specifically, at the high end, again, this is a dynamic score, more so a 2.5 level score, but a dynamic score nonetheless, who is a tremendous playmaker, who can make virtually any read you need him to in pick and roll. And so I think if you are optimistic about this move from the Wizards on-court situation, we have a lot of young talent. I think you have as well, but been very intrigued by what Keyshawn George has done this year. Above Carrington, after a very slow start, scoring-wise, he's starting to perk up. Trey Johnson, as you recently wrote about, and as Reedley talked about, Trey Johnson, very fun rookie, insane shooter. Bilal Coulibaly, who I'm still a fan of. I have some offensive questions. We'll get there while we're talking about the Wizards, but still an interesting prospect nonetheless. Alex Saar, who has played, if not at all-star level, at the very least a fringe all-star level. He's kind of the crown jewel of the young core right now. Trey Young, for Saar in particular, I am excited about. Because I have been intrigued by what Alex Saar's season has been like, or been so far this year. The shooting, the drives, the face-up game in general. We know what he does defensively, or at the very least, you should know what he does defensively. Very coverage versatile, very good rim protector. The future is incredibly bright. And so now for Alex Saar to go from, I can create a bunch of my shots and provide value, to this can become more of a bonus because I have a legitimate setup man for me in Trae Young. I can get easier looks. I'm really excited for what this addition will mean for him specifically for however long Trae is in Washington.
No, that's fair. I'm going to circle back to it, but I'm going to pull back as well. So just stick with me. Let's go on a quick ride. I think it's going to be one thing that's interesting, even if you go back to Atlanta, right? Everyone liked to show the graphic, hey, this is the Hawks without Trae Young, and this is the Hawks with Trae Young. This is untenable. And so understood, but I think there's a little bit more behind that if you think about it. The Hawks had worked to just empower Jalen Johnson and Dyson Daniels, right? And let them initiate and let them be part of actions. And we were at a point in Atlanta early on, preseason, early in the season, Trae Young's involved in more movement. Like, there's screening for him at the elbow. There's post-splits for him. He's moving around more. And it's like, okay, the Hawks are in a position to get teams in rotation, and you're seeing Trae Young receive skip passes. We always talk about Trae Young and pick and roll. And what's that word? Starts with an H.
Are we talking heliocentric? Or
yeah, that one. Everyone likes to talk about what he does there, but now he was able to drive closeouts and kind of get catch and shoot opportunities that way. He goes out. Jalen Johnson's doing this. The Hawks are just running pace, tempo. Anyone can grab, anyone can go.
They were defending.
Debatable, but we'll leave that. When he returned, was it, hey, Trae Young is back, or watch out for the Hawks because Trae Young is back? Because you would see at times when they grab and go, it's like, oh, Trae's looking for outlet. Oh, no, he's running the wing. You contrast that as far as Atlanta gets to a point where you can help us and we can ingratiate you in what we're doing, but I'm not sure we need as much of it. And then you contrast that with Washington, where they may need the playmaking, but they may need the hierarchy to a degree. And so how much does Trae Young balance things out? The one fun thing with Washington as the season's progressed this year, you've seen more flow. You've seen more, okay, we don't have the first option. Let's get to the second option. Alex Saar, okay, let me get to the other side. Let me get a handoff. Let me fake a handoff, swing, get a pick and roll. Like, they're getting to the point of understanding how to sustain offense. And on the good nights, again, in today's NBA, you can look at a team's record and say, oh, they're this. These teams could score, and they could generate good shots, and they could play. It's just how often can they do it? How much does Trae Young balance that out with his ability to operate and pick and roll, and his ability to get downhill, and his ability to draw attention from defenses? And then you contrast that with the current state of Trae Young, and how much does what teams decided, this is your box in Atlanta. This is where you're going to operate, Trae Young. Cool. If you look at his field goal attempts, just from different zones of the last 4 years, the distribution is kind of almost exactly the same. Here's some restricted area. Here's a whole bunch in the paint. There's some mid-range and threes. And then you look at the film, it's like, oh, yeah, that's drop. Turn the corner, is the floater there. Turn the corner, is the finish there. Turn the corner, skip pass, pull up, two or three. Having that locked in as a base is good. Will he get treated the same in Washington with that kind of having more of an impact? Where it's like, oh, actually, no, Trae Young, we can't let you cook. Does that open up two on the ball again? How does that kind of navigate and operate is something that's been spinning in my brain, because I think it's easy to look at Trae Young and say, well, he's only X, Y, and Z. But what does X, Y, and Z do for the Washington Wizards?
No, I think that's a good point. I want to bounce off of that, actually, because I think the hierarchy point is such a strong one. And that's why, you know, top of mind, I'm super excited about what this means for Alex Saar and what it means for some of the other guards that, okay, now I can just attack more closeouts, or I can just attack more tilted defenses. Or to your point about the flow that the Wizards have tried to establish, not just this year, even going back to last year. It's more natural now, like if a Trey pick and roll kicks something off and now we move to the second side, like that's a more natural spot for Keyshawn George to attack and use the big body to get downhill, absorb contact on drive, some of the playmaking unlocks and things. Like it should be an easier context for so many of these guys. And I think to the Trey Young pick and roll point, I will say for him specifically, I think it was a good point for you just talking about his overall shot distribution, how teams are treating him. I wonder how much of that is the context of Atlanta. We are only giving you this in light of some of these other guys raising up, and how much of it is Trey, the shot making has not been there to the same degree. And until, you know, similar to something that you brought up with Darius Garland, where he's obviously very good when healthy, but okay, you need to shoot enough of these floaters and enough of these pull-ups to make us do something different, and naturally have to make enough to make us do something different. And I think for Trey, because he's never been like an elite rim finisher, it's hard to be at his size naturally. He was able to compensate that with an elite floater at the high end. And the thing that annoys 80% of NBA fans these days is the foul drawing. It's like, okay, if I'm not getting all the way to the rim, at the very least, I am getting to the free throw line with some of these drives, with a lot of these drives, because I'm able to get you in jail, maybe to stop abruptly, get into some of those, or if you got your hand in the cookie jar, I'm ripping through those. Like he has all those tricks of the trade. And so even looking at this 10-game stretch that he's had in Atlanta so far, you've seen the foul drawing still be there. How often is he actually getting all the way to the rim? Not all the way there. What has the floater looked like? It's been like two or three like high mark games for him. And I think that kind of skews some of the percentages. But like game to game, possession by possession, it hasn't been the same Trae Young that we've seen at super high end. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, until you make enough of these, we're okay with this. And to your pull-up point, if Trey's just a low 30s three-point shooter, then we have now the extended sample of the three-point shot not being, you know, flirting with like Steph or injury and things like that. That's like, okay, I don't know if we need to do that right now. So like, I do think the context in Washington naturally is going to be different. He is the clear number one there whenever he plays, and that should invite a little bit more of two on the ball. But I don't know if we see a massive increase in that kind of coverage until he proves the floater is back or the pull-up three in particular is back.
Well, here's the counter I would throw at. When you have that kind of talent, it doesn't take too many made shots to make defenses reconsider to a degree, in my opinion. And so I think for me, I don't know that he's that level of shooter. And I feel like we can respect the mid-range jump shot. Take some mid-range pull-ups. Make him think about it. Get him engaged somehow. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest thing for Trae Young is just to get healthy. Even if you're getting older and the burst isn't quite the same, Trae Young has to have an element of drives to his game. He has to be able to get paint touches to either not just to create for himself, but to create for others. So that you have a mix of the pick and roll and the attacks in transition. You go back to 22-23, 18.4 drives per game for Trae Young. You go to 23-24, 15.6. You go 24-25, 17.1. This year, 10 games, 10.1.
Mm-hmm.
How are you generating what you want to generate? And can you find a way to get in the paint to open things back up for yourself?
Mm-hmm. I love the mind meld there. Literally, the top of my trade notes is his drive rate from 2021, going back to the Eastern Conference Finals run. He's at 29 drives per 100 possessions, and this year down to 16.2 per 100. So, like, to your point, yeah, that has to be back on the table for him. Like, I do think, if he's able to get healthy, which also kind of brings to mind, like, how much Trae Young are we actually going to see this year? In light of the health, do we want to make sure that he's just fully ready to go before he makes his debut, whether that's later this month, later this year, next season overall, because you also have the context of this top eight protected first round pick that they owe the New York Knicks? Like, I am just on a base level curious, when do we see Trae Young in Washington? But when he does make his return, like, yeah, you kind of need those drives. I think if you are able to threaten the paint more, like just on a very basic level, you have more opportunities to get to those floaters, to get to those shots at the rim. If you can, you know, win those drives cleanly. More foul drawing opportunities to kind of settle Washington offensively. So it's there. That's where I was kind of like, worried is too strong, but my brow is kind of raised with what Trey has been the last year and a half in particular. Because of that shot making, because of the burst, because with his size, the margins, no pun intended, are just incredibly small. And so if he goes from, you know, just to the drive stat, if I'm driving nearly 30 times per 100 possessions and now that's cut in half, yeah, I'm a skilled passer. How often am I actually accessing those reads?
Well, you know what I mean? Well, here's the thing I'll say. All he needs to have is a night where the defense is close to the level. Because I don't think people understand how quickly he diagnoses and makes these passes of pick and roll.
Oh, he's insane.
You could even watch it this year. I guess some games in Chicago. When he got Nikola Vucevic close to that level of that screen,
it was cool.
Firing it away. So that's, again, it's going to open something up for Washington. And so can he just get some of the scoring back on the table? Because even, look, I understand that we're not in love with box score statistics anymore. But if a down year is still 19-9, I mean, those don't grow on trees.
It's 28 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? So, I mean, we can relax on... We're doing the thing with small guards and trying to take him out as an archetype, and I'm not sure I'm quite there yet.
I think that's fair. Like, I did want to, like, talk to you about that because I know you have seen slash heard a lot of that conversation. And, like, I think we as a basketball community can be hasty to being first about where basketball is going. And I don't even think that's inherently coming from a bad place. But, like, I do think there's a level of, my team tried to take this away in the playoffs. It worked. If you do this, you win. Or if you rely on this and it can be taken away, you are bad. You need to pivot. And it's not always as black and white, to your point. I do think as mismatch hunty as the league has gotten, particularly in the postseason, and I think to your overall point about all these teams can score, they know when they get you in rotation, they know what to do with it. Like going back to some of those Hawks-Bulls games, it's, hey, we can put Trey in action, use this man as a screener, get a switch, and let's go. Or, actually, Trey, we're leaving you alone. Wait a minute. Trey Young is now in the weak side corner. He's the low man on this pick and roll. Like, teams are smarter about that kind of thing. And so that's where a bulk of the frustration for me with Trey defensively has come from, at least this year and a couple of years prior. Like, we talked about on this podcast, if not last year, the year before, I'm just like, no, Trey's not a good defender. I actually kind of like the effort that he's giving. Like, this is more limitation versus that. The fact that it's felt more like these are effort issues with some of these possessions, like, that is not a place that he can afford to get to. With where the league is, who he is, and in the combination of the two.
Well, I guess what I would say is, I understand the concerns. Mismatch hunting is going to happen. He's going to be put in action. Can he master show and recover? Can he get out quick? Can he do his job, be in help side, do his job early, get back out, keep the ball in front? I think he can get there. I think most times we've had these questions about whether it's a big, a small guard, can they defend? Eventually, they get to a point where they get there. Even you look at Cleveland, you look at Golden State, eventually we're going to switch. And if we switch, we're going to switch and double. We're going to try and move things around to just try and get you to do something else. And that literally is half the battle in the playoffs. Can I do this well enough to where you do something else? The thing is, no matter what, you get in the postseason, someone's going to get attacked. Someone's going to be put in action.
Yeah,
you could be as tall as Tyrese Halliburton. Come here, buddy. Let's chat. Let's see what happens. Every team is going to have someone in. You got to remember, this is a high confidence league. I might try and attack a matchup that you don't think I should. So, with that being said, I don't necessarily think that that's the end of the world. He does have to be in the right context. It does have to be a team that can understand what he is defensively. And so what you can't have is the Trae Young is having to help and recover. Trae Young is put in action. And then it's a post up or a drive. We now over help because it's like, oh, no, Trae, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And now we're in rotation that we maybe didn't have to be in. So can we get to a world where it's just solid and we can live with something, or is it just going to be a rotating wheel? I think that's a big question. I don't think small guard's done. I think the league evolves, but the league always stays the same. Remember when centers were done? Remember we were done with centers and bigs and rim rollers?
You have to be able to shoot the small ball. Yeah.
Yeah. And then now everyone's like, double big lineups. And I'm like, yeah, I remember what you guys said. Let's not relax. You guys, Kevin Love's still out there playing defense. So I'm not done with it. Do you think it's over for small guards? Do you, Nekias Duncan, think it's over for Trae Young as a star in this league?
Goodness gracious. I don't think it's over. I do think it is, to your first question, I don't think it's over for small guards. I do genuinely think it is just more difficult. I do think the bar is just higher in today's league. And so that's where, again, for Trae, and even with other guards, like, I want to look at the Trae defense and say he was in the right spot. He is just 6'1", and you lost that possession. Versus, hey, why is Trae standing flat-footed? You know what I mean? Like, eliminate those. And I would say to Trae going to Washington is overall, I'm going to circle to your second question, but like to Trae going back overall, like I think there is a real, I'm going to remind them who I am type motivation for him. It's back with Travis Link, who is in the management group from Washington. So you had that familiarity there. Like the one thing that I kind of worry about as we're talking about him setting the hierarchy offensively and how important that's going to be. To your point, I don't think this is, we got Trae Young, we are pushing for the playoffs next year. If you get that internal development and you get there, then obviously you take that. I do wonder what the defensive habits are going to be. Because like I don't want that to be a situation to where we are seeing more of what we saw this season in Atlanta with Trae, while you're still trying to build up all of these other young guys. And like what that could mean for the overall growth and the overall culture setting. Like that's something I'm keeping an eye on. I'm not saying it's automatically going to be bad as Cook. But it's like, I do want to see what that looks like when he is available. As far as Trae being done.
To my second question, yeah. Do you believe that Trae Young is done as a star in the NBA?
I don't think he's done as a star in the NBA. What I will say, and a lot of this is to, you know, to the defense and to the overall shot making. This is as perilous as it's ever been. As a Trae Young fan, as someone that got Mr. ABO jokes in the early season of the Dunker Spot podcast, I am rooting for him. This is as perilous as it's been. And when you are traded and not getting pick capital back for you and these kind of things, like the reputation is certainly hit. I do still very heavily believe in the playmaking. But again, like something has to bounce back for him. Like I'd love to see the pull up threes like fully bounce back for him, but I don't think it's done. He does kind of have to reestablish himself to get him out of this conversation at the very least. I think it's fair, and it's an indictment inherently. I think it's fair to have this conversation about him. I'm not going to go there yet, but it's fair to ask.
Well, that's swell.
That swell is a good shot. But all right, let's flip to the Atlanta Hawks side of this. CJ McCollum, Corey Kispert, in Atlanta, at least for now. Like, I think there's some reaggregation restrictions that they have to work around if they want to move either of those guys again. But as of now, slated to be members of the Atlanta Hawks. And I tell you what, if this does just continue to be CJ and Corey are there for the rest of the year, and if Atlanta makes other moves, it's going to be around like Luke Kennard or Kristaps Porzingis or whatever they want to do. We'll get there later. I kind of like the fit for both. And I think, one, if you're moving Trae Young, that is an inherent vote of confidence for Jalen Johnson, not only being your best player, but just being the face of your franchise moving forward. Like, I think that is just a fair thing to say. Jalen Johnson on track to make his first All-Star team this year. Could have made it last year if he stayed healthy. And now you make this move. And I think in adding CJ McCollum and Corey Kispert, my favorite part about that package for them, and I tweeted about it immediately, is we're getting some, not just three-point shooting, we're getting some volume three-point shooting in the room. And I think that is very helpful for an Atlanta Hawks offense that if you are building around Jalen Johnson, you want the impact of his drives. I think creating as much space for those drives is a prudent thing to do from management perspective. And on a very baseline level, if you spot up Corey Kispert, he will knock down a high clip of threes. If you spot up CJ McCollum, he will knock down a high percentage of threes. And the fact that you have movement elements to both of those guys also intrigues me. I think that opens up the playbook. Like Quinn Snyder, if you want to go back to the Utah days, he will draw up some fun stuff for shooters. Like, just look at some of the Utah film and some of the Atlanta film of what they're doing to open quarters or coming out of timeouts. CJ and Corey Kispert can fit into all those things. And naturally, CJ, there's more of an on-ball element for him. So as I've been kind of frustrated with some of the Atlanta lineups to wear before this trade. Okay, Trae Young is available, Jalen Johnson is available, Nikhil Alexander-Walker is available. Why are all three of them on the bench at the same time?
Because rotations, the guys.
Yes, but I don't like it, and the numbers don't like it either. With Atlanta specifically. Like, obviously, there are teams that can make that kind of a range of work. But, like, I'm just like, okay, why am I watching this Hawks game and all three of those guys on the bench, and you're wondering why you've been outscored 10-2 to start the second quarter? Like, that might be a reason. I think there could be some more natural staggering to happen between CJ and Jalen Johnson in that way. And ultimately, you just have another creator still to kind of vary what kind of stacker you want to do. So, like, I like it from that aspect as well. But I have more thoughts. But, Steve, what were your early thoughts on CJ and Corey in Atlanta?
Well, I mean, the Hawks get two players for one that have only been able to play in 10 games. So that seems like a positive for them. And CJ McCollum is still a bucket, still make big shots, still makes plays. And I think he fits into what the Hawks want to do, not just necessarily playbook-wise, but the way they play with their pace and their tempo and their ability to get quick shots and try and attack early. And he's someone who can still operate in pick and roll and still self-create. So you can kind of get those elements where he can start a play, he can end a play, he can put himself in different positions. And I think that should boost Atlanta. To your point about the lineups, I think they should just have more consistent scoring throughout their lineups and feel more comfortable. And so I think with the way that Atlanta plays, it's a lot of flow. It's a lot of okay, we have a matchup here, we can attack. Let's see what happens. So I think he fits into that pretty well. You don't necessarily lose the scoring element that you would have had with Trae Young. Kispert, I don't think Quinn Snyder will mind adding another shooter. Could be Kennard insurance or a Kennard replacement. But I just like the fact that the Hawks could have a little bit more variety. It'll be interesting to see how they try and combine things, but I think those two players fit into what they've done offensively.
Okay, I like it. Can I pose a quick question to you?
Sure.
How do you feel about the theory of CJ or Corey whenever if they're on the floor with Jalen? How do you feel about those two as screeners for Jalen Johnson?
Well, I mean, I think it just depends on who they are guarding or who's guarding them. And is that a matchup for Jalen Johnson? Because I think the thing for me with normally when a trade like this happens, I'm looking to see, okay, is a team going to be able to lock in more on a Jalen Johnson? But I think with the way the Hawks play, it's not as easy because he kind of gets things in a sudden way to a degree where it looks like it's pick and roll. He bounces to the elbow, then he attacks, or he's attacking in transition, or he gets on the second side, or he's initiating. Like it's hard to necessarily say, hey, this is one thing we have to take away. Gets interesting in clutch time. That's where CJ McCollum should help. But I mean, I think it all depends on who you're trying to put in action and what does that open up? Do teams feel like that's a switch? Does Jalen Johnson punish that? Because I think his ability to drive and either get to the paint and finish or force help and find a kick just keeps pressure on teams. Like, I think people got to remember, it's not just the scoring, it's the playmaking that's popped this year as well.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's fair. Like, I was curious because, like, that was one of the early thoughts that I had. Like, ooh, they're going to add a bunch of shooting. Hey, CJ McCollum, very good at like ghosting out of screens and either shooting or being able to attack immediately. And that's, let's get to one of these floaters, let's get to this pull up, whatever the case may be. Corey Kispert, also very good at ghosting out of actions, knocking out shots. That should be cool. And I was like, okay, let me look at some of the CJ stuff in New Orleans in particular, because you didn't get a ton of that in Washington this year. Like, let me see what it looked like with him and Zion, what it looked like with him and Brandon Ingram. And like the Brandon Ingram CJ stuff, it was cool to get that kind of reminder of like, oh yeah, they did this kind of toast teams. When they got to clutch time during that time. It's like, oh, we couldn't really deal with the shot maker Brandon Ingram. CJ was coasting out of stuff. If you switch, like, now it's Brandon just going to the elbow. Could get pushed out a little bit, but okay, now he has a matchup to attack. Like, I am excited to see that element with Jalen Johnson. Not the mid-range scorer that Brandon Ingram is, but I do think there are just some elements that you could tap into there. And like, one of the things that I alluded to when we talked about Trae earlier this week, when I'm just like, I was frustrated with Atlanta as a whole and where they were, and the Trae piece was looming a little bit larger. But I was like, man, Trae came back. I'm looking at Hawks, Bulls, and some of the others, like, oh, this is cool watching them kind of flow into Jalen, Trae inverted pick and roll late in games, and they're just like poking at matchups and stuff. So, like, I would love to see more of that. We're not going to see any more of that, unfortunately, with the trade. And so I'm intrigued. And so I look at some of the numbers, Steve. And going through the CJ screening for Brandon Ingram piece in particular, I was surprised it was only 168 picks across, I think, what, 2.5-3 seasons in New Orleans, but over 1.2 points per possession on those trips. With Zion, CJ down to 0.84, and I was like, ha. Huh. And like looking through some of the films, like, I don't really mind a lot of the looks that they're getting. This feels like shot making slash actually we're just going to switch and then send help towards Zion, that kind of thing. And so, like, kind of getting that file dichotomy was interesting to me, but I'm curious to see what that portion of the program is going to look like. And I think, actually, I'll pose a quick question to you, Steve, because you mentioned Corey potentially being like Luke Kennard insurance. Could he quietly be like Veet Krejci insurance? And not that Veet's been bad, but more so, if you look at the types of threes that Veet Krejci has taken this year, he has no business shooting as well from three as he has this year. Like, I don't know how you put up that kind of shot difficulty off the bench and continue with this efficiency. Like, is that kind of a play to, there's going to be some sort of progression at some point?
No.
And now we have another guy. Like, I just wanted to pose that to you.
Time to let it fly, buddy.
Fair enough. I have loved the Veet season, to be clear. Couple other Hawks questions I have for you, Steve. I think, naturally, a lot of conversation has surrounded Anthony Davis. He has been linked quite a bit to the Atlanta Hawks. Okay. They just should not look into that.
No. Onyeka Okongwu's played too well. Get Kristaps Porzingis healthy. No.
Well, see, we can
nip that in the bud right now.
Okay. Well, then my follow-up, Steve, is should they look to add a big at all? Maybe not as big of a swing as Anthony Davis. But should they look to add some sensor depth at all? Or are you just fine with their big man room?
I'm fine with their bigs.
Okay.
I have no problem with their bigs. If you can continue to kind of play this way, how much is it going to alter your team? Is it going to make your defense that much better? Your problem isn't necessarily your coverage with your defense. The fact that you overhelp and can't rotate. So I'm fine. You got two bigs that provide spacing, can roll. You can post them up. You're fine.
It's okay. I figured I would ask, get your thoughts on that. Like, I would say, funny enough, if you're going to trade for a Dallas big, like, I try to get Daniel Gafford on the cheap before I trade for Anthony Davis. The AD, obviously a better player. But, like, hey, let's get some more rim protection. Can we get a little bit more juice on the offensive glass? Like, the Hawks have been, depending on the night you catch them, we'll see what kind of rebounding team they're going to be. So, like, I wouldn't mind them getting some insurance, but I'm also with you. Like, I don't think I make the Anthony Davis swing. Like, that's a risk that I take with the salaries that I have if we are, like, fourth in the East and we really feel like, hey, we can actually make a big run at this and we can afford to do the Kristaps expiring plus something else. You're in the playing picture as of today. Like, I am not doing that and then also having to navigate, are we going to give him a max or near max extension? Like, I don't want to run that risk. So just wanted to get your thoughts on that, Steve. Any closing Wizards or Hawks thoughts before we move?
No.
Okay, fair enough. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, Anthony Edwards made a little bit of history. Want to talk about that and just diagnose what his season has been, because it's hard to say he's been underrated, but he has been kind of insane this season. So we're going to talk about that. Stay tuned.
The smartest NBA coverage on YouTube 5 days a week. Watch the Dunker Spot with Nekias Duncan and myself delivering elite X's and O's and film breakdowns. I just can't see anywhere else. Kevin O'Connor with deep analysis, some of the sharpest hoops conversations around. Every week, Tom Haberstroh and Dan Devine will be breaking down the stats that define the league on the big number. Plus, fast daily NBA updates and trends from Dan Titus to keep you ahead of the timeline. If you love basketball, welcome home.
And we are back with this episode of The Dunker Spot. And Steve, talked a little bit about Rudy Gobert on the last episode. Let's talk about Minnesota's best player in Anthony Edwards, who, after the win against the Cleveland Cavaliers, became the third youngest player in NBA history to reach 10,000 career points. Only LeBron James and Kevin Durant did it at a younger age. And that sets the stage for what has been a career best season for Anthony Edwards. As of recording, 29.2 points per game, career high. 57% on twos this year, Steve. 41% from three. 80% from the line. 5 boards, 4 assists, nearly 3 turnovers a game. I want to have a conversation about the playmaking for you because, like, I've enjoyed it. I think it's a bit better than what the box score numbers would suggest. But I've just enjoyed the subtle leveling up of Anthony Edwards. I think when we talked about him and the Wolves heading into the season, we were doing our division previews. We both kind of talked about his desire to add this, like, mid-range / post-up game to further round out who he was as a scorer. And I think we have started to see some of that. But I think the thing that really stands out to me the most, and this is something that you've hit on a bunch, so I'm not going to hang here too long, he just seems to have a better understanding of what defenses are trying to do. And he is not only selecting the right answer more often, he's selecting the right answer more quickly. And I think that combined with his own growth just as a scorer and the kind of terms that he can dictate within that context has made him more difficult to deal with. And looking ahead to what the playoff Minnesota Timberwolves are going to look like should make them even more difficult to deal with. Because we've seen in multiple postseasons, defense says, hey, we are going to try to take away X from Anthony Edwards. Go back to a couple of years in that Suns series. Hey, we're going to put two on the ball against you. We're not going to let you have fun. And it's like, all right, fine. Early pass, I might get it back on the second side and I can attack, and you're just not going to have fun. And we've just seen this over and over and over again. And I have enjoyed watching the continuation of that process for him.
I mean, I think the biggest thing with Anthony Edwards is he's just been so decisive. And it's funny that you said the quiet leveling up of his game, because I feel like the bucket getting has been loud to a degree. But mm-hmm. we've seen an evolution and a combination of an understanding of what he has to do as a scorer, what he has to do as a playmaker, and Minnesota kind of expanding and putting him in different positions to win. And so as you get to this point of the season, a lot more movement for Anthony Edwards, low-key. A lot more getting an elbow touch, let him cut off that. Or getting a handoff on him, a pin down. Letting him play out of those scenarios, opposed to just pick and roll. But he's also in pick and roll. He's also in isolation and post-ups. So you're kind of able to move him around the board a little bit and allow him to attack in different ways. But when he's just putting his head down, making the right reads, attacking, it's hard to deal with. Because on those post-ups, the footwork is fantastic. I think that's one thing that gets underrated with Anthony Edwards' game. His footwork is incredible. And so when you put him in a wide pin down, he's able to curl. You don't know if he's going to turn the corner and finish, or you don't know if he's going to hit you real quick and get to a step back. It keeps pressure on you. And now the added playmaking, if you put two on the ball when he's come off a pin down or any way, I'm going to get off of it. And I think to your point about the box score numbers, where Anthony Edwards has shined to me is the fact that, okay, I understand what the defense is trying to do. And I know I need to get off of it quick before they can do it. And so he does things as far as passing. There's a play against Cleveland. They're putting two on the ball. Anthony Edwards has success with it one time. The next time down, Jared Allen is getting ready to get up. Screen hasn't been set yet. Anthony Edwards just rejects to the right to embrace and take that trap. That's just a setup so he can come back left. Defense has to pull over. Because the big's not in position, the nail help has to come over and help. He passes it real quick. That's not going to get you an assist, but that's generating a team and forcing a defense to be in rotation. When he's in a pick and roll and able to attack a matchup and he sees where the help is and he skips it right away, he might get the hockey assist. He might not, but that's a key cog to getting teams having to rotate and react. So I think that's where I think Anthony Edwards should get more credit with his playmaking, because he's understanding and keeping things rolling for Minnesota more than people understand.
Yeah, and that's more so what I meant by like the quiet leveling up. Because I think, to your point, that has been such a better portion of his game this year, even though if you look at just the assist and turnover, it's like, well, this is a near 1-to-1 assist turnover ratio. That's not what you want for your primary initiator. This is where, one, just watch Anthony Edwards. But two, like watching all of the Anthony Edwards turnovers, it's like a lot of this feels like self-inflicted for him. Like you don't want turnovers overall because duh. But it's like, okay, a lot of these are dead ball. A lot of these is him making a read and like defender makes a good play. Or here's Anthony Edwards taking on to a reject, to your point. I am now making this pass. Someone slides under before a charge. It's like, yeah, he can get out of that a beat earlier. I don't feel like he made the wrong decision. That's more of a good defensive play. I will say quickly before I circle back to the second part of what you said. It is kind of funny watching Ant with some of the I am driving through help or I have a rip through. I've set up my defender. He doesn't get the call. And like those are some of the turnovers that he has in his film. And Ant is like all NBA first team. Hey, arms spread wide. You can hear him on the broadcast, where's the foul type beat. You want to see him rein more of that in. Like this is something that Chris Mitch has talked about quite a bit since he's been there. So like you get chuckles when you look through certain things like that, just filtered, like look at all the turnovers, how often that happens, pretty funny. But yeah, to your point, like the reads themselves have been better. They have been quicker. And I think, again, this bodes well for him and the Wolves as you get towards postseason time. To your balance point, because that was literally the first thing I had in my notes. His ability to balance and square himself is top tier. And like the first play that I think of, go back to Christmas, when he knocks down the corner three against Jamal Murray to send that game into overtime. And I was rewatching that game back the day after, and I spent like 8 minutes talking about it in slow-mo. And I'm just like, you are not supposed to be able to do this. You are not supposed to have
8 minutes.
You know what? Anyway, you're not supposed to be able to have that kind of awareness of where your feet are, be able to turn, square yourself. He has the elevation to where the shot still is going to get bothered. He just catches it home. It's like, he just does stuff like this all the time. So you see that more so to the mid-range point, his ability to set up shots. And again, like, it's not like he's getting blocked on a ton of those. The step throughs that he's able to tap into. And like, these were things that he was sprinkling in last year, but it feels like it's a higher volume this year. Like, he just has leveled up so much in like the minutia in that kind of way. I really enjoyed that piece of the product. To the mid-range game, Steve, how have you felt about the growth with that in particular? Because he hasn't hit the elite level yet, but it feels like such a step up from where it was last year. Like, he is closer to being a true three-level scorer than he ever has been.
I mean, I think it's the confidence in which he takes them and when he takes them, and the fact that he can get to it whenever he wants makes it very dangerous when he has it going. So it's not necessarily like, hey, this is going to be drop coverage, I have a mid-range pull-up. No, I have the ball, and I'm going to work driving. I can get to this step back where I'd like. I can pull up and extend and shoot over whenever I'd like. So to me, knowing when and how and being able to get to that shot whenever he feels like and having a command of it is just as important as how many he makes. I know that sounds like silly analysis, but what are you doing to stop that shot? And what are you doing to take away that shot? Especially when we get into fourth quarter clutch scenarios. Hey, he's got the ball handling and the footwork to get you off balance. Now I can get to the shot whenever I'd like. And when he makes it, it's tough to deal with.
Yeah, I think expanding the palette in that way is going to be important for him. To that point, as of recording at the very least, converted the shade under 38% of his mid-range shots last season on about three attempts. He is up to 43.3% on over three attempts this year. So big leap in terms of percentages. A little more quietly, and I think this is more so what you're speaking to, Steve. You're talking about him in the paint in particular, not necessarily getting all the way to the rim, but some of these intermediate shots, these 10-foot shots, these 8-foot shots that he can get to the counter, some of the help that he's seeing on these drives. Converting nearly half of those this year, 49.5% on shots in the paint, non-rim. That's up from 40.4% from last season. Another massive gain there, and that's where you get to he's converting 57% of his twos, because when he does get all the way to the rim, one, he can detonate on you and put you in the basket, put you in the stanchion. But like some of the, I am up here, I am hanging, you jumped with me, you were going down, I am still elevating. Like, those finishes are still there. And naturally you get to some of the foul drawing and stuff from there. Like, he just has a way when he's on to fully bend the game to his will. And like, that's the scary part for me when you're talking about young guards or young wings going from star to superstar, or from superstar to no doubt about a top five guy, which is what this is, the trajectory that Anthony Edwards, I think, is on right now. He's just in command. When you have the playmaking to complement that, it's a lot of fun. Last thing I want to hit on offensively with Ant, at the very least, because I think the leap last year for Ant was, holy crap, he is a 40% shooter on high volume. We thought he was going to get better at it. We thought he could be solid, but like, the drives would still lead the dance. What do you mean you're taking 10 threes a game now and shooting them at a darn near 40% clip? We fast forward to this season, 41.2% from three on over eight attempts. He is, as of recording, one of five players shooting at least 40% from three on eight or more attempts. The other four, Tyrese Maxey, might have heard of him, it's pretty good. Michael Porter Jr., might have heard of him, it's pretty good. Colin Knipple, might have heard of him, he's pretty good. I will save my Colin Knipple rant for next week, I promise. And Sam Merrill, welcome back after starting the season on the IR, shooting the leather off the ball. 37% on all dribble threes, slightly down from last year, but like, the timing of those is insane, and you really feel that in clutch time. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And to your point about the movement, well, you mentioned some of the wide pin downs that he gets and some of the attacks that he can get into there. But like, the off-ball movement for Anthony Edwards, I feel like, has been kind of underrated, especially when he's playing off of some of the pressure that's been created by Julius Randle, when he's able to put his head down. if the ball is just swinging all around. Now we're talking about closeout attacks from Jaden McDaniels. Like, he's done a really good job of filling with cuts, but also just kind of lurking around the perimeter for relocation stuff. As of recording, 17 of 27 on relocation threes per second spectrum right now. It was about 42% last year, which is an elite clip. So I don't, like, do I think 60% is sustainable? Like, no. But again, just kind of breathes itself into like that flow state that he's kind of in and the reads that he's making off the ball on top of that. So like it's been insane watching him develop into this as a shooter in addition to what the drives already provide. He's really good, Steve. He's really good. Quick free throw I'll toss to you. How are you feeling about the Anthony Edwards clutch player of the year case right now?
He was my pick to start the year, so.
He sure was.
We're going to stick with it until we can't.
I respect it. He is top 10 in clutch scoring right now. I think 70 points as of recording, which is 7th in the league. 18 of 23 inside the arc is not supposed to happen, and it's especially not supposed to happen for a guard. Now, naturally, we're talking about clutch time, so like those samples are naturally going to be smaller. But you're converting nearly 80% of your twos, which are the drives, which are the post-ups, which very quickly, like the logging can be kind of funny with post-ups versus isolation when it comes to second spectrum, but logged 37 post-ups in the regular season last year. He's already at 36 as we record this. So he has certainly shown a little bit more comfort in that area. But you get those in clutch time. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, on the post-ups, it's funny to see him understand, oh, no help is coming, and then now it's time to go to work. And so I'm going to hit you. You think it's going to be a fadeaway. You think you got me stuck. The footwork, spin move, step through. It's been fun to watch him grow in that area as far as I might face up. It's old school style. It's time to respect guards and wings with mid-range post-ups looking to get a bucket.
I respect, like, I think to the post-up is dead discourse that was popping up, like, earlier in the decade and things like that, it has been kind of fun. Like, one, Jokic, Embiid, there are bigs that just, they are just incredibly good at it, right? But, like, it has been kind of fun to watch the kind of inversion of this to where you are seeing more guards and wings. Like, oh, well, actually, I could do this. How do you want to send help now? Because this is a little bit different. Like, watching the Wolves, well, I think the first Wolves Heat game. Just impressive basketball games for Anthony Edwards in general with that two-game series against Miami. But, like, there was one possession, Ants posted up on the right wing, and Ants one pass, or Bam is one pass away because of some switching, cross-matching, et cetera. Ant takes one, maybe two dribbles, and Bam is like, no, I'm coming with a double. You're not about to post up this guy. Absolutely not. This is an easy kick to, I think, Dante DiVincenzo knocks down three above the break. And I'm just like, hey, man, if Ant's drawing this kind of help, from Bam, of all people, who is one of the best defenders on the planet. So, like, even if you don't want one pass away help, you kind of trust him to navigate that because of how good he is. But it's like, if Ant's drawing that kind of attention on those touches now, in addition to everything else, it does become a question of what do you do with him if this is the way that he's leveled up to. But back to the clutch point, like, 78% on twos, 57% on threes, 8 of 14 overall. He's 5 of 10 on off-the-dribble threes in the clutch, Steve. That's not supposed to happen either. Small sample size be darned. Like, he has just been insane. And again, we've talked a lot about what the mid-range game has been, what the shooting has been, the reads that he's making and things like that. Like, to the drives themselves, 1.24 points per possession on any trip featuring an Anthony Edwards drive. Last year, that was at 1.03. Massive bump there. He, among players that have driven the ball at least 300 times, he's number one in points per possession generated, Steve. We've talked about Shea earlier this year. Like, we had the Julius Randle stat earlier this year. There are a lot of elite names towards the top. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander currently third right now. Now it's Anthony Edwards. Him and Luka Doncic, the only two players above 1.2 right now. Like, this is where he is. And so a free throw I'll toss your way, Steve, as the MVP race is very open right now. How heavily are you factoring Anthony Edwards into this?
He's a name. He's in the conversation. Yeah. He's on the list. I do think for him, the production has to stay pretty elite, and I think the Wolves have to win a few more games. But, mm-hmm. I mean, if we're going to talk about Kay Brunson, potentially Maxey, Brown, Edwards, those are, I have respect for guard play. And so once you see everyone who's healthy, is that now 6, 7, 8, 9, 10? Maybe. But I don't have a problem with having him in the conversation. Now, if the Wolves are 2 seed, I think it gets louder. If the Wolves are 6 seed, I think it gets quieter.
Okay. I think that's fair. That is fair. I think he also at least deserves to have his name said to answer my own question. I think that's fair. Like, he should be somewhere in, like, you can argue anywhere it's like 4-7, somewhere in there, especially when you're factoring in the injuries and stuff right now. Like, I think that's fair, and if the Wolves do make that surge, I think they're going to be there. Two notes I want to hit, and we can get out of here to the next segment. Talk a little bit about the help that Anthony Edwards is seeing. Seeing a defender, a second defender, rather, on nearly 18% of his touches. That's up from last year. That's 10th league-wide among players with at least 2,000 touches. And again, handling that well. And if we're talking about growth areas for him, dealing with two on the ball as he's seeing more of it. Like, I am keeping an eye on him against ice in particular, because I think that's where, looking through the turnovers, a lot of that comes through, like trying to decide, when am I stringing this out? When am I hitting the pocket pass? And looks like, if Rudy's the screener, do I even want to make the pocket pass? And like trying to drive through that second defender, like to your example, against Jared Allen. So keeping an eye on that, much more effective against pretty much every other pick and roll coverage compared to ice, big drop there. So keeping an eye on that moving forward, but heck of a season for Anthony Edwards. So we're going to take another break. And when we return, we got another round of All-Star voting returns and a little bit of unrivaled talk for you as we preview some of the games heading into the weekend. Also, full day at practice, so got to talk to a lot of players and coaches. Had some fun stuff I wanted to share. We'll be back after this break. And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. And Steve, we got second returns for All-Star voting. In the West, the top five remains the same. Luka Doncic, Nikola Jokic, Stephen Curry, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Victor Wembanyama is your top five. And from going down a little bit more, Anthony Edwards at 6, Denny Avdija at 7, LeBron James at 8, moving up from 9th. Those are your 8 players in the West that currently have at least 1 million votes. Kevin Durant at 997,000, so I'm sure he's going to be there as of now. But as of the returns, those are your 8 with at least a million. And in the East, a little bit of movement, but the names remain the same. Giannis still first in the Eastern voting. Jalen Brunson has moved up from 3rd to 2nd, passing Tyrese Maxey, who is now 3rd. Cade Cunningham is 4th. Donovan Mitchell is 5th. Any surprise? I guess no real movement outside the East. Are you surprised by Jalen Brunson passing Tyrese Maxey? Do you have any notes about the top five?
Not surprised by Brunson and Maxey shuffling. I think it's good for Tyrese and Cade Cunningham to be that high. So salute to them for the years that they've had. The Donovan Mitchell, Jalen Brown saga is interesting to me, depending on who's going to snatch that, at least from the fans' perspective. And then what does that do as far as the other split? Does Donovan Mitchell get the nod from the players? Does Jalen Brown get the nod from the media? I am intrigued. The Anthony Edwards, Victor Wembanyama portion seems more fun. But that's another one where I'm intrigued to see which way the players and media go ballot-wise. Does Stephen Curry take a hit? Like, who kind of edges who out? It's going to be interesting. Did you want to salute Canada at all today after you yelled at them for 17 consecutive minutes? And Brandon Ingram still appears to be the representative for the Raptors?
I tell you what, Steve. I'm so proud.
What are you proud of?
Scottie Barnes was not in the top 20 for some godforsaken reason, and he has jumped to 14th in the second returns. It was a big leap. The people woke up. The people, you know, they used their laptops, they used their phones, they used whatever they needed to. They jumped in on the double vote days and things of that nature. That's what you want. That's what you want. Scottie Barnes is in good. It's nice to see him represented on the list. Shout out to Canada. Shout out to anyone who voted for him.
So you did all that hooting and hollering just to salute 14th?
Yeah, it should be like, again, like, do I think he has had a better season than MPJ or Pascal, etc.? Yes. Like, do I still think he should be the Raptors rep? Yes. But it was a lot more egregious that he wasn't in the top 20 at all than him just being behind those names. So I can at least remove that portion of the program.
I feel like my head is spinning. Why is your head spinning? I can't believe no one would have Scottie Barnes on the ballot. And I was like, hey, this ballot might happen. I'm not hearing it. And now it's salute to 14th. I understand.
He's on the ballot.
I get it now.
Base complaint is done. Now let's get him hired because he's been better than some players that have been ahead of him. But he's on the list. We salute you there. Other things of intrigue for me. Like, as you mentioned, the Jalen Brown, Donovan Mitchell thing. Donovan Mitchell had about a 42,000 vote lead in the first return that is down to around 15,000 now. So Jalen Brown absolutely gaining some ground there. And like, as the MVP conversation around Jalen Brown in particular has started to heat up over the last week and a half, I am curious to see like where the media lands. Cause I think there is a very loud look at what he's doing with Boston, who, you know, when we pod earlier in the week. They were the 2 seed. I think they're back to 3 now. Like, hey, he's having one heck of a season. No Jason Tatum, yada, yada, yada. Thinking to some like the on-off stuff. We're starting to have more discussion about that. So I am curious to see where the media lands on that front. With Scottie Barnes joining the top 20, Paolo now out of the top 20. Franz Wagner hanging on at 20th as the lone Magic rep. That is interesting to me. Still no Jalen Duren. No Bam Adebayo, which as much as I have enjoyed the defense and as much as I've discussed like what the offensive context is for him and how he's had to kind of bend his game and a lot of stuff is understandable, I also don't think he is fully healthy right now. With all of that context, that should be noted and acknowledged. The offensive production has just not been there as of late. And like that is going to be hard for people to look past, especially if you aren't consistently watching Heat games and seeing what the context is and him playing through stuff. He had 20-10 against Toronto back on December 15th. That was a loss. Toronto took over the second half of that game. He has not scored at least 20 points in 9 straight games at this point. He's averaging 12-11 over his last 9. 40% on twos, 25% on threes, 70 from the line. Like, that's just not going to cut it, even with the defense still being largely very good. So I'm getting kind of concerned. Norm's still the Heat rep on this list right now. I don't see that shifting with some of the Heat fan apathy that I'm seeing online now in light of the offensive production for Bam, which stinks for him, but that part is kind of dicey.
Well, here's the thing. You never know what the coaches are going to do. They could salute Norman Powell for being an offensive problem. They could salute Bam for being a defensive engine. And that's the thing. Once you get past a certain point, you understand what the 5 are going to be. Okay, now we're going to see who the coaches are going to go ahead and reward.
That's true. That is true. I'll say quickly to the West Point, because I mentioned in the East, Scottie Barnes joined the top 20. Cooper Flagg not in the top 20, Steve.
Hooper.
I shout out to Cooper Flagg, who has been hooping, to your point, since Thanksgiving, Steve. 22 points per game, 55% on twos, 32% on threes, so that is perking up, but still not an elite number. 7 boards, 5 assists, still on the block. Mavs winning his minutes. He was number 1 in your most recent rookie ranking, Colin Knipple number 2. Which I have to say, one, check out Steve's rookie rankings. They have been very good. You get notes from everywhere around the league. A lot of notable mentions there. Also, shout out to you having Yegor Joman on the list now. That brother is hooping in Brooklyn right now. I want to give him a quick shout out there. But yeah, Cooper Flagg. The fans are starting to really get behind him in the votes. I think the Christmas Day game certainly helped, but he's just been playing super well. Getting adjusted to this roster context in Dallas. So I want to shout him out. KD and Shingun down to top 10. Like, that was my initial complaint on the first All-Star segment that we did. It's like, hey, what do you mean? You'll have both of these guys in. So both in the top 10 now. Austin Reeves dropping a little bit. Kawhi going from 20th to 13th. I think anytime you have a stretch where
he averaged 40 points a game for a week. Yeah. Yeah. Let me get on the app right now.
Yeah. Like, I think that would do it. But that concludes my All-Star thoughts and seeing this stuff to me. Was there anything else you want to hit on with this list?
All good. Okay. All good. Ready to dive into your unrivaled thoughts.
Oh man.
As you have spent a never mind, won't even do the joke. You're good.
You know what, Dennis Pod? Still in the undisclosed location in Miami for Unrivaled. Excited to see this doubleheader later on tonight. Gonna be on the scene there. But yesterday, Steve, had the privilege. As this is, again, my first time on site for Unrivaled, covered the league last year, but first time being in the arena and all those things. Went to the practice day that they had. They had like 3 different courts, so teams kind of cycling throughout the day and things like that. And it was, on a very basic note, just a lot of fun to kind of bounce around and see what these teams are working on, like the availability of the players and coaches you could tap into. You can really get some one-on-ones there. The scrums are solid, like more intimate because it's not like 80 media people swarming, trying to get one person. And so just kind of bouncing around, had some notes that I want to dump heading into the weekend of play. One, just on the injury note, got to ask Skylar Diggins, just one, how she's doing and how she's feeling, because she did not play in the season opener. She was listed the right lower extremity, which the injury designations in basketball over the last couple of years have really gotten funny to me, but that's okay. But anyway, missed the opener. So on Monday, she said she feels great. I asked her, hey, does that mean we're going to see you this weekend? She responded, she feels great. So as a basketball fan, I am going to hope that means that we are going to see her, if not later tonight, on Saturday. Then we're going to see her like on Monday.
No, it's time for you to respect Marina Mabry.
Hey, listen, I would love. I have a baseline level of respect for Marina Mabry, the basketball player.
How concerned were you with the type of shots that were taken in the first game?
Honestly, I'm going to surprise you a little bit, Steve. Like, the types of shots didn't bother me as much considering what the roster context was. Like, you're already without Fee for the year, and then you also didn't have Skyler. So, like, her being aggressive didn't bother me. What got me was the timing of some of the shots. There more so than like the actual shots that she was taking. Like, that's... I think the closeout, the either the second or the third quarter, it's already an 18 second shot clock compared to 24. But like, she takes this pull up three from pretty much half court with the shot. And it's like, no, you actually could have bled this. Like, you didn't have to take this. You weren't up against the shot clock with this. So like, that one was a loud one where I was like, hey, I appreciate aggression. No.
Hey, that's all I needed. I just wanted to make sure. I knew there was a question mark hanging around there somewhere. But one thing I would say, as people, you know, Unrivaled is 3-on-3. It's a little bit different, but there are different things to take away. It's a different way to kind of attack. It's a different way to watch. You're working on a different skill set. You're asked to do different things. You were able to ask some players about their different ways to prepare for Unrivaled versus the WNBA. What stood out there, Nikias?
I appreciate that setup, Steve. But no, I did get the bounce around because I was curious about like what that looks like. Because I'm thinking on the W side or even just the NBA side, like the level of assistance that you're dealing with, the level of film that you're getting. If you are a numbers person, like you have like your second spectrums or your synergies and things like that to get data from, if you're trying to prepare game plan, stuff like that. I'm just like, okay, how different is this in Unrivaled? So got to ask Laces BC head coach Andrew Wade about like what the prep differences are and just what the general game differences are. And he was talking about just like how confined some of the game planning is in terms of play calling in particular. You don't get to call as much set stuff at the made baskets because of the pace of play, which makes sense with Unrivaled being full court 3-on-3. You're just trying to get it up. So you don't always get to say, hey, we're going to run like a variant of horns, or we're going to get into a double drag, or we're going to get into pistol or something like that. You're just trying to jet this ball up the floor. And so like, that's been an adjustment for him. Got to ask Noelle Quinn about the same thing. And she was like, you know, it is basketball at the end of the day, so you are still scouting tendencies and things like that. But with the quarter length being 7 minutes, just the game itself being shorter, and again, the overall pace of play, like some of the stuff has to be more bite-sized. She did get into some of the like technology used, like to the second spectrum point or the synergies point. Like, they do have a program that kind of tracks, okay, what are the pick and roll combos that are working? Who's getting what points per possession on off ball stuff and things like that? I was like, okay, that's interesting that they do actually have that in tow. So I'm absolutely going to try to roll some elbows. Who wants to?
No. Keep your elbows where they're at. You keep this away from 3-on-3. You keep these numbers away from 3-on-3. Was this the offensive rebound rate again? No, thank you.
All right. I'm glad you made that reference, though, because not. The other thing that I asked Andrew Wade about, and you were top of mind for me, Steve, because something that you keep track of with offenses and just ball movement in general is assist rate. How many assists are you getting per made shot? And that kind of thing. And so I asked, in light of what the Unrivaled box scores look like and just being a 3-on-3 lead, there's going to be a lot of drives, a lot of isolation, things like that, lack of help because of the fewer bodies. I was like, so, Mr. White, like, what exactly is the ideal assist rate for teams in Unrivaled? Because it's just a different context altogether. And he's kind of said, like, I think if we can get above 10 total assists per game, like, that's kind of the benchmark that we're trying to hit. And I was like, you know, in a vacuum, it's like, ooh, that's kind of low. But again, when you think about the context of Unrivaled, oh, that makes sense. Because you could just win matchups and get good shots. Like, it doesn't have to be the 2014 Spurs. It doesn't have to be, you know, last year's Minnesota Lynx in terms of assist rate, stuff like that. So, like, it's been cool. It's cool to get that insight and also to kind of recalibrate for myself as I look at some of these box scores. Like, okay, maybe 10 assists on 27 made shots isn't, like, a bad number in this context. In the W, it would be. Nah, but, like, this is actually fine.
They're flying around, man. They get up and down. Yeah. I will say real quickly to the coaching point, it'll be interesting to watch as the games develop. What do they try to add as far as sets go? Because there's a lot of actions that are quick hitters, and then there are some they run all the way through, but there's only so many actions you can run, but it is fun to run different actions with three people on the court. So who's going to get more pin downs? Who's going to get more movement? What are teams going to try and do when they get a chance to execute?
Two things on that front, Steve. Because I, again, asked Chelsea Gray the same question. That was something that she mentioned. Like, it's 3-on-3. There's only so much you can do. There are only so many coverages that you're looking at, and you're just looking to read as the ball handler, things like that. So, like, you nailed that portion. Second thing, as we got to see a little bit of Phantom BC practice, and, like, they were going over, like, particular sets and stuff that they wanted to add. And I was like, oh, this is pretty interesting. And so they were, like, working on, I've heard it called Oklahoma. I know the play name actually doesn't matter in this context, but essentially double drag.
Two screens into a pin down.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, how about this? It was cool, like, watching them try to get that together, like, get the timing of it down. And so as Phantom BC plays over the weekend, I'm excited to see if they break that out. And I was like, ha, look at y'all bringing practice into the real game. So that part was cool. That just came top of mind for me. So I appreciate you bringing that part up. Other quick things for me before we get into some of these games. Look, I got to talk to Paige, asked her about seeing different coverages in this context. And, like, if it's a sense of pride, I was like, oh, yeah, y'all can't just run what you want to run against me. Like, y'all have to sprinkle in some of these traps that we saw in the second half of that game, things like that. It was kind of like a yes, but also, which is, like, ultimately, like, we just want to ding whatever your initial game plan is and kind of force you to adjust, which is a very basketball thing. Like, I might just appreciate, like, I've only got to talk to Paige a handful of times. But, like, one, just very smart basketball mind. So I always appreciate getting to just ask her things like this. But she's very even keel with this stuff. Like, she's not going to give you, I wasn't looking for a sound bite anyway. But, like, even if I was, like, she's not going to give you that. Like, she's very, very good at handling media. So I wanted to give her props there. But it was cool to get her insight into, like, what she's trying to read, what she's ultimately trying to accomplish offensively, what they as a team were trying to accomplish offensively. So that part was cool. And Steve, got to talk to Alana Smith.
Now, hold on. Did you say hello? To Alana Smith?
I sure didn't. I feel like that would have been too on the... Well, one, I can't do the boys. Two, I feel like that would have been too on the nose. I don't know how well that would have come across coming from me in particular.
Missed opportunity.
It, probably so. Like, I'll just have to take the L on that. But she is very pleasant to talk to, I will say, on that front. But, like, in talking to her, naturally, I wanted to ask her about defense because she is one of the best defenders that we have in unrivaled in the W League, in the W, just period. And so asked her about who some of her influences were. She mentioned Asia Wilson, her ability to use her limb and the things in the spaces she's able to take away. She mentioned Alyssa Thomas and the way that AT uses her strength and physicality to bother defenders. She mentioned Fee, and she talked a little bit about her footwork. She talked about how well those two communicate together and kind of the chemistry building that they've been able to do on that front. And she also mentioned, like, how well Fee uses her limb when she has to switch out. And this is something that me and you have talked quite a bit about over the past couple of years with the Minnesota Lynx. They don't just switch, they chew up space. And Fee, in particular, is incredibly good at that. And so it was cool to hear Alana mention that portion of it. She also talked about when she joined Minnesota, like, she wasn't sure if she's going to be playing the five full time. And so, like, year one was still very good at it, obviously, but it was a bit of an adjustment for her. But I asked her, like, hey, it felt like you dealt with centers better this past season. It's like, yeah, it was more strength-based training over the offseason to fully prepare. And, like, now that I know I'm going to be the five, I want to make sure my body is ready to do that. And that plus tricks of the trade, rather, with dealing with different personnel and learning the scouts and stuff like that certainly helped her on that front. So it was full there. And then I asked her about screening, as she is very good at getting contact and getting out of there. The slips are very impactful. And, like, the angle flips from her are incredibly good and have been going back to the Chicago days. Asked her about that. She credited Cheryl Reeve for, like, kind of drilling some of the angles and things that she's looking at there and said, hey, you, with you not being a big, you have no choice but to nail your angles. And so, like, getting that insight was cool. So appreciate Alana for giving me some time, but it was nice to kind of get into the brain a little bit there. So that part was cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So fun stuff there. Got more, but yeah, I just wanted to get the high notes on that front. But heading into the weekend, Steve, on Friday or later tonight, we got Vinyl BC taking on Rose BC. And then we got Breeze BC taking on High BC. I am excited for Vinyl versus Rose. Naturally, that is a rematch of last year's championship game. If you remember, Chelsea, that was like the one game Chelsea didn't shoot the leather off the ball in, but still kind of dictated turns. You got 19-19 from Azrae Stevens in that game. So I'm curious to see, like, how much of a revenge angle we're going to get. And also, top of mind, didn't get to talk to Teresa Witherspoon, but wondered, like, what the Ka availability is. She also did not play on Monday. Did get to see her, like, shooting around a little bit in practice. And so I hope that means that she is, if not just flat out available tonight, that she's getting close. But we'll see on that front. Is there anything in particular you're looking for in that matchup?
I'm looking forward to more Rose basketball. I'm looking forward to more Chelsea Gray. I'm looking forward to see if the vinyl can sustain some offense. But I'm looking forward to the Rose.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. 35-8 for Chelsea. Plus the three steals. Defense was insane. Breeze BC, High BC in the nightcap. Two new teams. Steve, we get Paige Beckers. We also get Paige Beckers being defended by Sonya Citron, I would imagine. I'm excited to see that extent.
Hive got a score.
Yeah, they do indeed have to get buckets. And so we'll see if they get a better performance there.
It's 3-on-3, and the Breeze are not playing around. You got to deal with entirely too much on that team.
Yeah, they got like the, like they're obviously young and fun, but like they got the chips on their shoulder. Like it's kind of fun listening to Paige talk post game, listening to Rekia Jackson. Like they, like, yeah, we're young and like we will give you buckets too. So that part should be fun. I will say it wasn't my question, so I didn't want to have it in this section, but like in the earlier section. But like Paige and Dom were both asked about like Paige tossing Dom a lob at some point. Paige seems very excited to do so. Dom seems very excited to dunk in this format at some point. She says she feels it in her legs. So we may not be far away from seeing one of those. But should be an interesting matchup nonetheless. Oh, also got to ask Kelsey Mitchell about like her off-ball setups because she's so good at running her player into screens. Like, how does that differ in the Unrivaled context? She gave me some insight there, so that part was cool. But those are going to be your Friday games. A lot of games over the weekend as well. From the weekend slate, Steve, or even the Monday slate, is there a particular matchup that stands out to you?
Laces against the Mist. The Mist are a very intriguing team on both ends of the floor with the lineups they can put out there and the defense they can play and the ways that they can poke at you. So how does that evolve as it goes forward? That one is one I'm keeping an eye on. Are there any that stand out to you?
That is top of mind for me. That is going to be Laces Mist. Yeah, Laces Mist is going to be the late game on Saturday to give that context. So like that one's there. Rose BC versus Breeze BC on Sunday. Aside from that one's probably my headliner. We get Chelsea and Paige on the court at the same time. If you are a mid-range purist, this seems to be the matchup for you because both of them are going to get into copious amounts of bucket getting in the mid-range area. The big battle is going to be a fun one in that one as well. At least I would manage so. So ideally no injuries or anything like that as we head into that matchup. But that's probably the biggest one for me, Steve.
Hey, that's gonna be a test for the Rose.
Yeah.
Breeze got bigs, and who's guarding Rekia? Who's guarding Paige?
Are you ready for Chelsea Gray to defend Rekia Jackson if she gets busy early? And now Rekia's got to deal with the Chelsea hands. Like that could be a fun.
But who's guarding Paige?
At Lexi Ole.
Take me through there. Take me through there.
No. No shot did you just drop. Anyway, so quickly circling back to Phantom BC. Did get to see Dana Evans. I was mentioning him like installing some stuff. Dana Evans was scrimmaging there. She also missed action on Monday. Posted on Threads, like she misses hoop coming soon. That was on Wednesday. And so like I don't know if that was a practice reference or if she's actually gonna be available this weekend. I hope so. So keep your eyes on that. At the very least, a general get well soon to Aaliyah Edwards that took the nasty spiel on Monday. Was able to leave under her own power, but did not return to that game. She posted like a game day vlog on TikTok yesterday. Ended up, kind of had to go to a health center to get checked out and things like that. She did say she's good. So that could mean no major long-term issues, but she's out for a while. That could mean she is playing this weekend. I don't know. We'll get closer, we'll get answers to that over the next 24, 48 hours, but Leo was very good. And even going back to that game against the Rose, like her switching on to Chelsea Gray and like not looking out of place was interesting. And this is in the midst of Chelsea still having the ridiculous game overall, but like that was a bright spot for Lunar Isles if you wanted to get there. So yeah, man, I am excited for this slate of games. I think that is all I have on the Unrivaled front. Did you have any closing thoughts before we get out of here, Steve?
No.
Okay, fair enough.
I think we did a swell job. Had a swell episode.
It is swell. It is swell. Thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel if you haven't already. That is where you will find all of our content. You can catch me on socials at Nikias NBA. You can catch Steve on socials at Steve Jones 20. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.